Welcome to Consensus, a podcast from Census Technologies.
Hey, what's going on, folks? It's Daniel Litwin, voice of B2B, and welcome to another episode of the Consensus podcast, brought to you by Census Technologies. We are happy to be back in the hot seat, breaking down trends, technologies, market movers, best practices, tips and tricks, everything to do with the world of sterile processing departments. We're here to help you level up your SPD game. But before we dig into today's topic, where we're going to be hearing from two census pros to help us break down some important strategy for you guys, I want to make sure that you're all caught up on previous episodes. So make sure that you're heading to our website, census.com. Again, that's C-E-N-S-I-S.com. There you'll find previous episodes of the show, as well as, of course, plenty of information about our solutions and services. You can also find more episodes of Consensus on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. So make sure you're going and hitting that subscribe button so you get full access to previous episodes, as well as notifications when we drop new SPD thought leadership. All right, team, let's jump into it. Today, we are digging into one of the most important and often invisible foundations of a high-performing sterile processing department, and that would be data. This is a common topic on this show. We did an episode previously kind of unpacking how to make better use of data in general to drive outcomes in SPDs, right? But today, we're going to be digging a little deeper, right? Every day, SPD teams depend on tracking data to understand where trays are, how workflows are moving, whether instruments are being processed correctly, whether reports can be trusted at all, right? But when that data starts to get a little messy, a little noisy, that impact can spread pretty quickly. Duplicate tray records, inconsistent scanning, outdated instruments, missed workflow steps, confusing reports. These can all create what we're going to be aptly calling on today's episode, data disasters. I imagine some of you out there are getting the chills just hearing these, right? They're pretty common, but we're here to intercept them and give you the strategies for dodging these data disasters, right? The tricky part is that these issues don't always look like data problems at first. Sometimes they look like reporting issues. Sometimes they look like staff compliance issues. Sometimes software frustration. But underneath it all, there's that real question, right? Is the system accurately reflecting the workflow that is actually happening? Is the data on point, basically? So to help us unpack that question and to dig down into some strategies for dodging these data disasters are two experts from Census who see these challenges from different but complementary angles. So I'd like to go ahead and introduce each one. Welcome, ladies. I'd like to introduce first Jill Sweeney. She's Senior Clinical Educator at Census. Jill brings a clinical and workflow perspective to our conversation today. She works closely with facilities to understand how teams are actually using SensiTrac day to day. Jill, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today? Great to have you here.
I am doing great. Happy to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to pulling from your perspectives here today. Again, folks, we're also joined by Jennifer Bingaman. She's Director of Business Services at Census. And Jennifer is bringing the data and the business services lens to our conversation today. She helps organizations understand what their system data is telling them, where those gaps may be hiding. So Jennifer, welcome. How you doing?
Hi, welcome. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, looking forward to tapping your insights here as well. So together, Jill and Jennifer, you know, they help facilities move from frustration and guesswork towards cleaner workflows, stronger reporting, more trustworthy operational visibility. So together, they're going to help us unpack again how to dodge these data disasters. Jill and Jennifer, could you each give us like the elevator pitch, 60 seconds or less, on your background in and around SPDs, right? How long have you been in the space and what kind of lens are you bringing to the conversation today? Jill, let's start with you.
Okay, yeah, so I'll kind of work backwards from where I am today. So I've been working for Census since 2020, right in the midst of COVID. I came to Census. Previous to that, I was working as a traveler in sterile processing, worked at several different facilities, and saw a lot. I saw several different tracking systems in addition to SensiTrac, as well as several data disasters along the way. And prior to that, I worked as a scrub tech for a while. And prior to that, I actually had a whole nother career completely unrelated to sterile processing. So I've been in the sterile processing world for going on about 11 or 12 years now. So that's how I get to where I currently am.
Amazing stuff. Well, that 12 plus years of experience is exactly what we need to help our listeners dodge data disasters. So thank you again for joining us. And then Jennifer, same question your way. What's your elevator pitch background on the SPD space, how long you've been here, and how your experience is coloring your lens today?
So I have been in this space with Census and other companies for 20 years, over 20 years now. I've done everything from answering phones on the help desk, so helping SPD departments on their day-to-day issues with instrument tracking software, to being an implementation manager and actually implementing hospitals on the software, creating enhancements to the product as a product manager. And now today where I landed is working solely with customer data and my team. We work to get hospitals back on track with when they run into data issues or data enhancements that they want to do.
All right, folks. Well, with that context, let's dig into the meat. It's time to figure out how we can avoid these data disasters by just identifying the red flags a little earlier. So we're going to start by covering those red flags and then a better understanding expectation versus reality on dodging these data disasters. So Jill, I'm going to toss this one to you first. When you go on site and you begin reviewing a facility's system utilization, their workflows, what are some of those first red flags that you typically notice that signal, aha, you know, they likely have some unmitigated data disasters building?
Yeah, so there's a lot of them. So I go on site, I review, you know, I spend probably a quarter of the time that I'm on site reviewing their utilization. I'm looking at specifically their data. And so a lot of the things that I look at, like their total container inventory, and I'll ask them, like, how many containers do you think you have in the inventory? And they'll be like, oh, 800. Well, I'll look it up and they'll have like 2,800. So like, they'll have no idea how many different container types they have. And, you know, one of the things I think they just throw the reins to staff. They let everybody enter stuff in. And so then I put in, you know, a Synthes small frag. Well, then Jen comes along and she puts in Synthes small fragment. And then somebody else comes along and they have another completely different name for it, SMFR, for example. So having duplicate tray names for the same tray, that's a frequent problem that I see. And so then that just builds up additional inventory that doesn't really exist. Also people printing labels out of inventory instead of actually like assembling them. So they'll, you know, instead of having stuff that comes in and like loaners, for example, they will print up additional trays instead of putting them in properly and doing stuff like that. Inconsistent naming conventions, which was, you know, the famous small fragment. Obsolete instruments that are still active. Naming conventions that aren't appropriate. So, you know, having one instrument that's called by 10 different names. Workflow inconsistencies and staff using workarounds. That's probably one of the biggest issues that creates data problems is those, again, if people have too much access that they really shouldn't be meddling in, they end up with building workflow workarounds and going from there. So, and then the reports not matching reality. A lot of times we hear from leadership that they're frustrated because this is what they believe it should be. However, this isn't what the reports tell them. So, you know, just trying to address why this is what it says and why that's not really what it is.
Now, Jennifer, going to loop you in here. From the data side of things, are these issues that Jill just laid out, and there are quite a few issues there, are these more common than people probably realize? Like, give us the lay of the land.
Yes. I would say every database or every facility that I've looked at their data has some varying degrees of data that's not correct or data that's missing, or, you know, there's two pieces to data here. Some folks think data is just like my count sheets or what I put in, you know, to sense, track, to store, but it's also the data coming in from the workflow. So the processes and the recording of, you know, trays when they were assembled and when and with what instruments. So there's two pieces to that. And I would say it's what Jill mentioned is spot on.
Now to both of y'all, would love to get your thoughts here. You know, a lot of leaders expect technology to automatically solve some of these operational problems. And yes, technology is helpful, but usually technology plays a role in reinforcing or facilitating other operational shifts, you know, more nuanced and thoughtful use of data, a better decision-making, et cetera. So I'm curious, you know, that kind of like silver bullet syndrome, I guess, is that one of the bigger misconceptions around SensaTrac data, that just having the data is going to solve the problem? I'm curious what y'all see.
I would say so, yes. I mean, SensaTrac or any instrument tracking software just gives visibility by recording behaviors of staff, the behaviors of the inventory workflow, when things are skipping workflow. So the software reflects, I don't know, process maturity. And they'll see that in the data. The better the data, the more the process is matured in the departments.
Jill, any extra thoughts there?
No, I mean, it's a very accurate statement that, you know, what the reports are telling them is actually what's happening. SensaTrac doesn't make up things and put it in the reports. That's factual. It's just black and white. Computers do what you tell them to do. However, if the leaders don't understand how to interpret that, and if they're not like actually seeing what that workflow is, then they'll believe what's in that report. And, you know, if they ask their techs, well, you know, I see that there's no data in SensaTrac that you're scanning to decontam, but then the tech is like, well, yeah, I always scan to decontam. Well, not necessarily, because it's not in the report. If they were, then that would, you know, reflect in the report. So, you know, just knowing what the workflow is, knowing what the proper workflow is, and being able to answer to that, it's very important.
Yeah, essentially, you know, data is only as good as what you can do off of that data. Good reports are great, but you got to then have that report inform a workflow and then follow that improved workflow consistently, right? Okay, so let's now start to unpack some other contributors to bad data, right? One of the biggest contributors to bad data that can cause some of these data disasters is inconsistent scanning behavior. And there we go. We're already seeing, you know, workflows and data are often very much hand in hand. To fix the data, sometimes you got to fix the workflow and vice versa. So again, big contributor to bad data, inconsistent scanning behavior. And that is, again, a really human workflow issue as much as it is a technology issue. So Jill, I want to ask you, what does inconsistent scanning actually mean? What does it look like day to day in an SPD? And any context on what might cause inconsistent scanning?
Well, I mean, the amount of work they have to do. So and maybe it's a shortage of staff members. Maybe they don't have enough staff to capture the information that they need to capture. But it's kind of like a catch-22 that going back to scanning and decontam, well, they're like, well, I'm too busy to scan and decontam. But if they're not capturing the information of reflecting what's happening in decontam, well, then they can't justify the need for additional staff. So, you know, like something along that lines, that would be something that is, you know, important in capturing that accurate data. You know, other places where the inaccurate scanning could affect the overall data is going into, instead of properly going through container assembly, for example, they'll instead go to inventory and just print a label off of there because it's faster than scanning your container, going in, completing the count sheet, and moving forward that way. Well, that might be true that it's quote unquote faster. It really causes problems because it doesn't show then in your assembly facts that those were assembled. So again, you know, your data is going to be in it's not going to be factual. So,
you know, everything that Jill talked about shows up on the reports. So leadership sees the reports, they're showing trays that are available when they're not. You know, it says this tray is on the shelf and I go to the shelf and it's not on the shelf. It's usually because, you know, folks are bypassing steps or using workarounds, thinking that they're going to scan everything later, like batch scanning, but never manage to get back to it because they're busy. This is a busy team. So if those things are happening, then the reports and the, you know, tray locations, that they won't be correct.
Now, when folks are doing that kind of, you know, small shortcut approach to their day-to-day workflows, how does that end up creating some domino effects? Like, what are the downstream impacts of that kind of small shortcut culture manifesting day in and day out?
Well, I mean, I mean, you can start out. So like Jen just used the example of people not scanning stuff to the shelf. So then the OR is looking for a tray, and maybe the OR initially, they had the tray left over from a previous case. And so they were trying to help out by not scanning it or sending it back to SPD. And they just thought, well, I'll go and help put this away. But instead of scanning it back to the shelf, now it shows that tray is still in OR4. When that was several days ago, and we know it's not an OR4 anymore because that was several days ago, but now they're looking for that same tray and we have no idea where it is. And maybe they, instead of putting it back on the shelf it belonged in, they were like, well, here's an empty spot it fits in. And so now we have no idea where that tray is. So that's one way that, you know, trying to keep track of that. Otherwise, you know, just throughout the process, you can going even to major issues is if somebody misses scanning something to the sterilizer, now there's no sterilization records for that issue or for that tray. And that may, you may not know that today and you may not know that next week, but 3 years from now, if there's a patient that has some sort of an issue and you don't have, and his lawyer is now contacting the facility saying we need the sterilization records related to this tray, related to this surgery, and we don't have any sterilization records because it didn't get scanned to the sterilizer. So, I mean, it can be something from as minor as, well, we didn't scan to decontam, to as major as we don't have any sterilization records related to that. So, and everything in the gamut could, you know, fall in there.
Jill, I got another one for you here, but if this is the status quo of a facility, let's say there's an SPD team that, due to their workflows, the, you know, amount of resources and time, as we said, very busy teams, you get a lot of that inconsistent scanning behavior, right? What should facilities do when they're dealing with inconsistent scanning behavior? Are there specific steps you recommend, tips and tricks? Does this have more to do with human behavior? Does it have more to do with better tools and resources? I'm curious what your advice would be.
Well, one of the first things I recommend if I come on site is one of our tools is out of sequence, and it's, you can set it up to customize it throughout your workflow to tell you if you're missing steps at any point. And so I always recommend that a site turns on that out of sequence. And I always recommend that the first thing they do is just turn it on for the sterilizer, because that's why we're here, is to make sure trays are sterile. So if nothing else, make sure your trays are getting sterilized and you're not missing that sterilizer step. Once you got that down pat, well, then you can go move on and make sure they're getting scanned to decontam, make sure they're getting scanned to the OR, make sure they're getting scanned throughout that perioperative loop. So that's one of the greatest tools that I can recommend. There's a great report that goes with that, that goes back, and leaders can look at that report and they can get it daily or weekly or however often they want to look at that. And it'll tell them, okay, did their techs try to scan wherever, and did they acknowledge that error and go back and correct it? Or did they just ignore it and move on forward and not correct it? So I think that's one of the greatest tools that SensorTrek has, is utilizing that out of sequence. I think a leadership presence in the department, and whether that, you know, whether that looked like the manager coming out and working in assembly for a couple hours or working back in decontam or whatever. I know when I worked in the department in the hospital, that, you know, if we were busy, that manager was back gowned up and back in decontam helping out back there. So you know, some facilities, the managers are hands off and they're busy as well. Everybody's busy. So that's understandable. But I think that a priority needs to be made that leaders need to understand what is going on in their department. And so I think that's, you know, one of the best ways that they can do that is, you know, it's hard just to look at reports and be like, well, this is what the story is that the report is telling me. Well, that is what CensiTrac tells you and what the report tells you, but there may be other contributing factors as to why the report is telling you that.
That plays into as well, like making sure that the staff is educated on why scanning matters. Like, why does it matter that I scan this tray to storage, or why does it matter that I process my tray through assembly versus just printing a label from inventory? When they understand the why behind it and the amount of record keeping that SPD has to keep, I think it really makes a big difference.
Yeah, 100%. I think that all of the things that we're talking about today, I mean, like if I was a tech and I would just think, well, what is the data behind all of this? It doesn't have anything to do with me. I just work in decontam. I just assemble trays. I just do whatever. Data doesn't have anything to do with me. I don't put in count sheets. I don't do any of this. However, if at Huddle they talk about on a daily basis or whatever basis, you know, this is why we're doing this, I think that that goes a long way to helping staff understand, okay, I know you might be annoyed because previously you had access to do all this stuff and now I'm a new leader and I came in and took that access away and you no longer have access. So but explaining that, you know, this is the why behind it, I think just like Jen said, is, you know, key.
Okay, so now let's transition to another major source of data issues, right? We covered already inconsistent scanning and the human behavior portion of this. Now let's unpack the role of tray accuracy and instrument build data, right, as being some of the major problematic sources for these data disasters. If the build data is wrong, right, everything downstream becomes much harder to trust. So this is about building consistent ecosystems that are setting the right kind of foundations for that data to live on. So let's unpack this. Jill, I'll toss it back to you again. But what kinds of tray and instrument build problems do you see most often? What are the most common scenarios or, you know, examples?
Well, I think the ones that you just named that, you know, they have wrong instruments in the tray. They're not the instruments that they want to have in the tray, that they, you know, we talked earlier about, you know, multiple tray names for one tray. You know, sometimes we'll find major tray number one, and they have three major trays number ones because at some point somebody went back and remade up, and then you have like this tracking that it'll be like, oh, well, we scanned major tray number one to the room at 8 o'clock this morning, but then we also scanned major tray number one to a different room at 10 o'clock this morning, and that's completely impossible. But no, it's not, because again, people are printing labels out of inventory. And so, you know, making sure again that that those shortcuts aren't happening, that they're you know, not that they're keeping track of their data. And, you know, even if maybe they look at one service a month, they go through and like print off one service a month and like be like, okay, this is needs addressing. Let me go through and look at this and try to get that straightened around. So,
and then Jennifer, to loop you in here, what happens when teams start losing trust in the system, right? If the build tray data is wrong, if the instrument layout is wrong, I imagine that has cascading effects on team culture and team operations, and it can incentivize some of these other shortcuts, workarounds that just cascade, right, and start to like build on top of each other like a big snowball. But yeah, I'm curious, like, what have you seen from the trenches? What happens when teams start losing trust in the system because of bad data?
Well, one of the things that I see is that compliance drops. So if they're consistently seeing count sheets that what they have on the screen doesn't match what's in their tray, and it's consistent, then there's a mismatch between what CensiTrac says that tray should have and what that tray actually has. And I'm not talking just like missing one instrument. I'm talking like missing several instruments that are supposed to be there, or this right. tray in front of me has 10 more that are supposed to be in that tray, but it's not accurate in SensiTrak. So there's that. It just doesn't help with compliance. They you know, start to ignore the spreadsheet or the account sheet on screen. Or if it's missing storage locations, like maybe they don't have an idea of where that's stored. So they don't know where to scan it to. So it doesn't get scanned. People start going back to handwritten notes. I once saw account sheet update written on a napkin taped to an assembler's workstation, which is great. Like that, the information's out there, but it's not for everybody. You know, there's one person that works at that station every day. So there's things, you know, just making sure to keep your account sheets updated. There's spreadsheets outside the system. Like if they have a list of trays that are missing from case carts, when SensiTrak is, you know, capable of showing that list and prioritizing that inventory all within the software. So it's seen by everyone rather than creating something manual.
Yeah, I think another problem that, and all the things that Jen said are like 100% accurate. You know, if SensiTrak isn't like the sole source, well then people, and it may be fine for Jen, who's worked here for 20 years, and Jen knows all these trays, she knows everything. It doesn't matter if if SensiTrak says one thing, but there's an Excel spreadsheet secretly taped behind her workstation that says something else, and whatever. I mean, that's fine. But if I'm brand new and I just started, I don't know any of these top secret things and whatever. So, you know, that's the problem with the staff not consistently knowing what they're supposed to be doing. The other issue is a lot of places, there is an issue between SPD and the OR not getting along and not trusting each other. And I think that if the data is not accurate in SensiTrak, and even if maybe the data's okay for most of the things, but if 5% of the trays or 10% of the trays has data disasters, the OR is going to be like, all the things in SensiTrak is wrong. And, you know, and they're really going to kind of lose faith in the system and whatever. So really, you know, it comes down to, trying to improve that OR-SPD relationship for the good of the patient, because that's really what this whole thing is about, is doing what's good for the patient.
You know, once you start seeing the cascading effects of a lack of trust in the data, lack of trust in the system, you start to see these shadow systems. Jennifer, you know, is talking about Excel sheets, napkins, sticky notes. I'm curious what the, most random place you've seen a shadow system start to develop is. I don't know if anything beats a napkin. But, you know, Jill, I wanted to ask, once you start to see that kind of cascading effect, right, what is realistic for facilities that already feel overwhelmed by cleanup? Like, if you're telling a facility, hey, you can fix this issue, you can get back in front of cleanup and sound data, what's actually a realistic place for them to start, rather than just saying, you know, we got to reinvent the wheel, or overwhelming them with a bunch of fixes?
Yeah. So I think Jen pointed out count sheets. I think that's like, if you're going to do anything, if you can get your count sheets to be accurate, and start small with that. And there's a lot of different ways that you can approach that. Some facilities, they don't have the manpower in SPD to have them do it. So they have like their service line coordinators take care of their count sheets. So they have the ortho coordinator take care of the ortho count sheets, or they have whatever. So, but making, one person in charge of either all the count sheet changes or for the service lines, you know, and having those service line people do it is nice, because they're the ones that know about it and know what they want done. So, having those count sheets, having a count sheet for every container, that also goes, if they don't have a count sheet, they don't get productivity credit for it. So if all they do is open it up and close it out, they don't get any credit for that. So if they're trying to justify FTEs, they need to have count sheets in for those containers. So identifying trays that don't have count sheets, putting in count sheets, making sure count sheets are accurate. I think that that's one of the most important things to do for that, in order to get their workflow on track, is one of the easiest wins that they can do. I mean, there's a lot of nice things that they can do, features in Census Track and things like that. But I think that that is one of the easiest places to start. And they can, you know, again, take off little bites of it as they go. If they, you know, if Wednesday, they're less busy on Wednesday, maybe they're going to just print off one service and they're going to go through their, look through their count sheets and decide, okay, this is for GYN and these are the count sheets that need to be addressed. Let me go talk to the GYN person and, you know, we'll go through these 10 different container types and make sure this is what they actually want. This is what the count sheet should look like and take it from there.
All right. Transitioning now to another common complaint, another common source of data disasters. And this would be just general reporting problems, right? When you hear the common complaint, hey, this report is wrong, right? Often though, the report is showing something important. It's just not what the team expected to see, right? Or maybe they're seeing a report that is feeding off of data that they don't feel in their day-to-day, right? So it's not so much the report is wrong. It might just be that the report is mismatched with reality or with the data they're expecting to see in the system for one reason or another. So Jennifer, tossing it your way now. When someone says, hey, sorry guys, this report is wrong, what's usually happening? Like, is it really wrong? Is it just a mismatch of expectations? Kind of unpack what's really going on here.
So usually it means that there's a workflow that's inconsistent. So the data on those reports can only reflect the process or what's being recorded in CensiTrack. So it becomes more of a workflow issue. And then too, as we just talked about, if there are pieces of data missing, you know, from the overall CensiTrack database, then that can play a factor, you know, in as well, but it's mostly because workflow is inconsistent.
Could you expand on that a little bit? And, you know, Jill, feel free to chime in here too, but what are some examples of reporting frustrations that you see often from facilities in their day-to-day?
Well, you know, I'm going to take it back to printing a label from inventory rather than assembling a tray. Your turnaround time for that tray from the minute it hits decontam all the way through sterilization is going to be way off. Because there's no way, you know, it's missing a whole chunk of that workflow. It's missing how long it took somebody to inspect every single instrument on that tray and make sure it's ready for sterilization. So that's probably the biggest one that I can think of. If they're not scanning, you know, they'll see some folks have processed 10 trays through assembly in the same 8-hour period, and somebody processed 100 trays. But it looks a little off because those 100 trays were cameras or batteries. And so it makes it seem like the information is not correct, but it's really uncovering what's going on in the department.
Jill, would love your thoughts on this one too, right? What do you see from the trenches on some common examples of reporting frustrations that facilities run into quite a bit?
So that's like what Jen said, especially like if I did 100 trays during my shift, but Jen only did 20 trays during her shift. Well, again, if you look and all I did was scopes the whole time, well, and Jen did vascular trays or whatever, it is going to show that, you know, especially if they're using their complexity levels, that's another data area that they could be using that would clarify that why it looks like I'm really the rock star and Jen's really not, when and in fact, it's switched that, you know, Jen's the one that's doing the amazing work and I'm cherry picking my work. So so using, you know, the different fields that are available to them will help them get better information back out of the system to clarify where their perceived shortcomings are in their data. So that's one way that they can, you know, better make peace of their data, I guess. Other things, you know, just, you know, some facilities like to, you know, they're not consistently running reports or using accurate tools when they are running reports. So they may set up their reports and maybe they just don't understand how to accurately set up their reports. And so they don't have their reports set up that it's properly returning back the correct information. And that's really just a lack of information. So, you know, knowing where to go in CensiTrac to get additional information, you know, going to our webpage and being able to look up QRGs related to the quick reference guides related to the using the reports module, using the integrated help guides in CensiTrac to help them navigate through that reporting module, you know, and there's like a lot of turnover in sterile processing. So, you know, a lot of times when we come back on site, you know, I'll be here last year and then I'll come back on site this year and it's completely different people. And they've come from, you know, a role where they'd never worked in sterile processing and now they're in charge of sterile processing. And so they don't really understand sterile processing themselves because they haven't been in the role long enough to really fully grasp what's going on. So, you know, just using their training resources so that they're familiar with what they want to be looking at and where they could get that information from.
Yeah. And I mean, I feel like we've harped a lot on like, here's all of the issues that we see every day, like this whole podcast is about issues, but it's the reality in that these happen sometimes. And so I've even seen some facilities, you know, tie it all back to accountability. So they include the scanning or software compliance in their annual evaluations. You know, as Jill talked to you earlier, you know, encouraging departments to use the out of sequence warning. Like there are little things that can be done in the software to shoot out those red flags and say, well, we've got a workflow issue here, or we've got a compliance issue here. And a lot of times it's folks don't know about them. So that's what we're here for.
Yeah. And the things that, you know, Jen's talking about, a lot of times people are like, well, I'm too busy to get this stuff set up, which Jen's team is able to help. So, I mean, reach out to her, reach out to your customer success manager, and they can help, you know, get you, you know, if they're like, well, we need to put complexity levels on all our trays to help us understand what's getting returned to us. Well, if you don't have time to go through your tray inventory of 2000 trays, which probably really you don't have 2000 trays, but first of all, Jen's team can help you clean that up. And, you know, you can put complexity levels on that so that you do understand better. Okay. You know, this is what I'm looking at and this is why this is the way it is.
So then, Jennifer, to wrap up this section with you, how important then is workflow standardization to make these reports more meaningful and less wrong, right? I mean, I imagine it's very critical, but like in what sense and how should we even approach this idea of workflow standardization in this context?
It's super important, not just because of like a trace progression through the workflow, because that is just as important. That we're documenting that at every piece or at every spot that tray moves. But it's also just making sure that if you don't have a workflow in place today and setting that up and creating that, and CensiTrac has features in it that can help, you know, determine what that workflow is to help keep everyone on the same path for processing inventory.
All right, team, to hit on one more major factor that contributes to these data disasters, I want to draw attention to training gaps, another human issue here, right? And onboarding drift. So maybe you set the expectations right the first time, and then things tend to peter off, right? So even if the original workflow design is solid, departments can still drift over time. This is natural and honestly should be expected and, you know, tackled as such, not a big anomaly, but something you almost begin to expect. Jennifer, I'd love your thoughts here. Why do departments tend to drift away from the original workflow design after go live? Is it just an inevitability of slight day-to-day nuances slowly building up into change, or is there something else at play here?
I would say it's a lot of things. So everyone who works in sterile processing knows about turnover. Turnover rates are high for management, leadership, and assemblers and techs within the department. So you get trained on the new software, you're using it, everything's going really well for a while, and then all of a sudden you get a whole bunch of new hires, and those new hires learn shortcuts. Busy techs train other busy techs. And those processes, as you kind of alluded to, Daniel, they just evolve informally over time. And then eventually that's where we start to see the compliance issues.
Now, Jill, if folks are experiencing that kind of drift, that kind of gap in training, what resources does Census offer? What resources are available to help departments retrain or reinforce some of these best practices?
Yeah, so every site's assigned a customer success manager. That customer success manager is willing and able to train people on, whatever they have questions on, any workflow issues that they might be having that they can utilize SensaTrek to help resolve. So, leveraging that CSM to really work through those issues and get those training issues resolved. We have our help desk that's on call, 24/7 for work stoppage, but during normal business hours, they answer calls live. So if they have issues, whether they're minor training issues, whether they're actual like system issues, I need this report built and I can't figure out how to get the report to return the information that I need, any of those things, calling our help desk and asking for that. Every page in SensaTrek has a little question mark up at the top. That question mark will give you a detailed integrated help guide specific to whatever page you're on. So as long as if you have a question about loaners, as long as you can find your way to the loaners page, that integrated help guide will give you information specific to that. My team, we help our Service Plus customers. So if you are a Service Plus customer, once a year we come on site and do a assessment of your workflow and your data. So, that's that. And then we also send a trainer back for a week to do on-site training. There's several modules in SensaTrek that'll help you, stay compliant with your data, new techs in line and, making like their competency module, for example, making sure that all techs or all staff are up to date on their competencies. There's several different ways of using the tools available within SensaTrek and outside of SensaTrek to be able to, get additional training to answer questions that may arise and address anything related to that.
And Jennifer, I'll loop back to you to close out this segment, but how important then on top of all of this is refresher training compared to initial onboarding? And any tips on how often this should be happening?
Oh my gosh, incredibly important. Even I need a refresher course sometimes.
Hey,
software, it's a lot. It's a lot to know and it's a lot to learn. And it's evolving all the time with, new product enhancements and things like that. So I always recommend setting time like every month, just 30 minutes to get on to the Census Central or the customer portal. There's tons of videos out there that show, how to do things in SensaTrek or on information on reports or just generic training. And that can be accessed by new hires as well. So you can include those training videos in your new process, or your new employee process, onboarding process.
All right, folks. So we've laid out quite a few issues, sources, right, of friction, challenges that end up cascading into and reinforcing these major, data challenges, right? Data disasters. So we've laid out all of the reasons why we see these data disasters, but I want to wrap our podcast episode today with how to dodge these data disasters, the whole reason we're really here. We need to lay out some practical fixes that actually work for some of these main sources of friction, right? So we're going to close with some of that practical advice for facilities that feel overwhelmed, resonate with what they're hearing here, but maybe don't know where to start. Jill, I'll start with you. For facilities listening right now that feel overwhelmed by bad data, where should they realistically start, considering it's usually a multi-layered issue? How do you even understand the best place to start?
Well, again, reach out for help. You can, you know, your whether it be your customer success manager or your Service Plus team, or whoever may be able to give you advice, reach out to them. You know, maybe Jen's team is the right place to look for advice, but look to the pros for help and, you know, look for the best place to start. Baby step into things. Don't just be like, okay, we've got 100 things to fix, and then tell your team, okay, these are the 100 things we're going to do, because then nobody's going to know where they should actually go. So start with, you know, one thing, and, you know, work on that one thing, and, you know, follow up with reporting on that one thing, on making sure that staff are compliant, on, you know, maybe it's just, you know, documenting when scopes come down from endo GI that you're capturing that point of use treatment, and that that's documented in SensiTrack. You know, just look at, make sure, you know, the tracking on that is done, that you're capturing that and whatever. Once you're good at that and that's solid information and that data is always in SensiTrack, well, then move on to something else that you have as a, you know, a high priority thing that needs to be resolved. And you, it may just be, I feel that this is what's high priority, or maybe Joint Commission has come on your site and said, this is high priority. So, you know, depending on what is priority at your facility, you know, look into that, determine what route you want to go and how you're going to go. And then just, you know, one step at a time, you know, start working on getting those issues resolved and move forward, you know, with better data and better workflows.
Yeah, 100%. One thing at a time. And create super users and have those super users mentor other teammates in SPD. That's where we found, I've witnessed a lot of success with that at many facilities.
Yeah, and that the super users, I was recently at a site, and this was the first time I had ever seen it, that like each tech was in charge, or they were a specialist in a certain, you know, you're the ortho specialist. And so like, if I didn't know anything about ortho, they would be like, oh, well, go talk to Bob because Bob is the ortho specialist. So, you know, use the super users, however you decide to utilize those at your facility to, task them. And people take a lot more ownership in things when like more importance is put on something, and they're like, Jill, you're in charge of this. So I'm much more likely to really vest myself in that and coming up with a solution, as opposed to just being like, this doesn't have anything to do with me.
Yeah. And just one more thing, when you talk about like reaching out to Census, like we have seen and experienced so many different facilities who function so many different ways. Chances are somebody at Census has seen your issue before and knows how to help you resolve it.
Yeah. And don't ever feel like you're alone in it, or that, you know, whatever. I go to between probably 75 and 100 sites per year and do visits and review data. And every site I go to, I can make no less than 8 data recommendations of things that they're not utilizing fully or not doing correctly or things like that. So it's not like, I mean, even sites that are doing a great job, there's still plenty of room that they could improve on. And so definitely, you know, don't feel like, I don't want anybody to see this mess, because that'll be embarrassing. So.
Now, Jennifer, for the leaders out there that are listening to today's episode, what should they be focusing on when they're reviewing the numbers, right? Like, what is the most actionable thing that leaders can really focus in on so that they're playing their role effectively?
I would say focus on the trends and not the one-offs.
Mm. Yeah.
So if they're consistently seeing, you know, 150 trays processed through assembly a day, but only 30 going through decontam, that's probably a scanning compliance issue, you know, in decontam. So, and that's a trend. It's, you know, consistent over time, not just on a certain day. There's going to be spikes and I'll call weirdness in the data, depending, you know, day to day, but focus on the big picture pieces first, because that, you know, picking one of those, like Jill suggests, one workflow and narrowing that down can uncover several different data issues that can all be addressed one at a time.
Yeah. And just to add on to Jen's point, I mean, if they're only scanning, 100 trays in decontam, but they're scanning, 500 trays in assembly, and they're scanning 500 trays to the sterilizer, but they're only scanning 20 trays to storage. Okay, well, now we know where the two missing scanning compliance points are. And now we don't know if you run a report on your sterilizer and it shows that you have 10,000 items in your sterilizer. Well, it's probably not a true story that you have all those things in your sterilizer. You've just never moved them out of your sterilizer. So, being able to identify where, and like the reports you need to do that, it would take you 5 minutes maybe to set up those reports and see that. And then even if you once a month ran those reports, and then you could, address that with your team and be like, okay, we're doing a better job scanning to storage. We still need to work on scanning to decontam or whatever.
And now for the teams that are watching today's episode, right? The actual SPD boots on the ground folks that are out there dealing with these challenges, responding to them in real time. A lot of the challenges that we broke down honestly had more to do with the human behavior, their kind of relationship to the data rather than the data itself, right? The data is really only as good as your workflows, as your consistency, as your reporting. So what would y'all both say, and I'd love to hear from both of you here to close things out, what would y'all both say is the biggest mindset shift that facilities need to make when it comes to tracking data, specifically SensaTrack data, so that they can dodge these data disasters?
Well, I think personally, and I'm going to go back to when I worked in sterile processing, if I was working in decontam, and it was busy, the first thing I did was throw out scanning and decontam because I was like, I don't have time for this. I'm not going to do that. However, that's like the first place that you really get into trouble is by skipping scanning because, well, it might take you an extra 30 seconds to do that scanning. By doing the scanning and capturing that information so that leadership has that information to rely on, they can then go, if they've got, how much scanning is getting done, how many containers are being processed in decontam through assembly, whatever, they can take that then to their leadership, to the periop director, to their C-suite, to whoever, and request additional positions that we need additional people because it's taking us from the time something leaves the OR until it gets to prep, it takes us 4.5 hours because that's how long it's sitting in a dirty elevator. It's sitting in decontam waiting for us to touch, getting into the washer and then getting out to assembly. If they have that information, then they can say, that's not acceptable. We need more people to work back in decontam. We need to, somewhere we need additional FTEs. So, it may seem like the shorter time saver just not to do the scanning, really, you're just providing bad data. And then that's really not going to get you anywhere, like getting additional help in the department. So,
yeah. And these issues are fixable. These aren't, nothing can be done. These are fixable with better workflows or more training, consistent leadership engagement. It's all the factors together.
All right, you two. I think with that, we'll go ahead and wrap today's episode. We covered quite a bit here. We laid out a lot of the sources for data confusion and data challenges. But more importantly, we're wrapping up with some takeaways and some tips. And interspersed throughout our conversation, folks, I'm sure you guys heard out there in our audience, some common challenges that you're also facing. But also some encouragement and some solutions for how you can start to tackle them more productively. So with that, Jennifer, Jill, thank you both so much for your insights today. Again, folks, we've been hearing from Jill Sweeney, Senior Clinical Educator at Sensus, and Jennifer Bingaman, Director of Business Services at Sensus. Jill, Jennifer, thank you both so much for your insights today. It's really been a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you, Daniel.
And thank you everyone for tuning in to today's episode of the Consensus Podcast brought to you by Sensus Technologies. If you like what you heard and saw, make sure that you're heading to our website at sensus.com, C-E-N-S-I-S.com for more, again, about our solutions and services, and for more about SensaTrack and how you can put it to work to help you solve some of these data challenges. Make sure you're also subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify so you don't miss out on any future conversations from the larger SPD world. So again, I think the biggest takeaway here as we close is that unreliable data usually points to process inconsistency, right? It's not automatically a people issue per se, but it's also not automatically a software failure, somewhere in the middle. Often, it is the system revealing where workflows, training, cleanup, or accountability need more attention, right? And that's really what bad data or what, you know, scary data is telling you. So the good news is that these problems are fixable, with cleaner workflows, with stronger training, with consistent leadership engagement, and a willingness to look at what the data is actually showing you, you know, not just seeing if it lines up with your expectations. That's where facilities can build reporting that they actually trust and that reinforce good day-to-day workflows and habits. So with that, folks, I'm Daniel Litwin, the voice of B2B. And can't wait to see you on the next episode of the Consensus Podcast, where we will continue giving you the nitty-gritty, the actionable tips, and the overall insights and hot takes that are shaping the SPD world. Thanks again, and we'll see you on the next episode of the Consensus Podcast.